Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome in, everybody, to Fantasy Pros. This is the Fantasy Football Podcast. It is me, Joey P., Joe P. Zapia, and the NFL Draft is in the rearview mirror. However, the NFL season is right in front of the windshield, and we're going to help you prepare for that long drive towards 2024. To help me, of course, in this car, I'm going to put them in the back seat with the child locks on, especially on the windows. It's D-Bro, Derek Brown, the King of Bros, and, of course, our college football expert over from Betting Pros, the man behind the Thor 500, Thor Nystrom, and we are going to do the draft grades for the AFC here today and for the NFC as well. And the thing is, everybody's doing their draft grades. However, the difference here is Thor Nystrom, because Thor Nystrom, the Minnesota madman, has a little bit extra behind his draft grade. So let's talk about why what we're going to do today is a little bit different from your perspective, because you've got a little fancy algorithm working here that I think the people need to know about.
Yeah, every year when I do my draft grades, it's right after when the draft gets done on Saturday, I run ROI on them, you know, with the 500 board. The draft slots, you have the trade chart, and I have a modified trade chart with mine. So, you know, every slot has a point total that is put on it. And then you do the same thing with the 500 board. So every prospect on that, they get assigned a point total. And then you end up seeing, you know, with the team, what value they got on every single pick. And then you just run the numbers after the draft happens, and you end up seeing what ROI every team got on their class. And that's basically how I end up doing the grades, doing it on a bell curve. I do give credit for, of course, hitting team needs in addition. And then things like draft day trades, what you got in the value on that. So those are a couple extra factors that are added to that. But the biggest weight on that is ROI that you got in your slots.
Now, the eye test matters too. And from a fantasy perspective, D-Bro is going to give us his draft grades based off of those. So let's dive into it. Let's just jump in with 2 feet here, and let's start alphabetically with the AFC. And let's begin with the Baltimore Ravens here. Now, the Baltimore Ravens, historically a team that always makes the most of what they're given. Usually they are picking late in most rounds, but they went and addressed the need at corner. They went ahead and got some pieces there on the edge, on the offensive line as well. So Thor, what does the algorithm say about the grade when it comes to the Baltimore Ravens?
I gave the Ravens a B minus for what they did over the weekend. They went with Nate Wiggins in the first round. That was their most interesting decision of what they did, because it was a binary thing. The primary needs that they had heading in, it was cornerback and offensive tackle. And you had that crazy scenario in the first round where all the offensive tackles were getting sucked up the board. And the decision for the Ravens there, it was you had Tyler Guyton getting taken one slot above them. And so that's why they end up taking Nate Wiggins in the 30th slot. So I was fine with that selection. Then so you defer off offensive tackle in the first round. Then in the second round, they end up taking Roger Rosengarten with the 62nd pick. I think I would have taken Kingsley Suamatea, who ends up going one pick after Rosengarten. A minor nitpick, but certainly that would have been my preference. The rest of their picks were fine. You know, they end up getting Tez Walker a little bit after that. D-Bro and I were a little bit lower on Tez Walker. Turns out the NFL was as well, but they the Ravens got him basically right around where he was on my board, the 113th slot. They got him 119th. I love the value they got on TJ Tampa at 130th. The NFL was punitive to the Iowa State cornerback. He was 50th on my board, but they ended up knocking him down because of the testing, but a very good guy on his collegiate tape there in the Big 12. But overall, I give the Ravens a B minus for their effort.
D-Bro, as Thor mentioned, not a very heavy fantasy draft here. They did draft Devontae Walker later on there. Also, Rasheen Ali, the running back from Marshall. So anything from a fantasy perspective here, you can grade it however you want here. Overall, obviously, from a football standpoint, it does matter what you do on the offensive line. We know that. And from the defensive aspect too. But what do you give the Ravens here from 2024 draft grade?
It's funny. Thor and I are handholding. I gave him a B minus two. I liked some of the early picks and things like that. I love Thor's mention of, you know, the way that the offensive line went. But for me, looking at the skill needs and just from a fantasy perspective, man, I mean, they still have some needs on the offensive line. Like, I still have worries about this offensive line, considering the right side. They lost both these guys. Yes, they addressed tackle, but they still have big guard needs. Tez Walker in the fourth, while I don't disagree with the value, it's just an uninspiring pick. I mean, we know what he's going to be in the NFL. He's raw. He's a field stretcher. He's a player that I'm going to be. There's just other better players on the board in the fourth round, which I already updated my rookie ranks and dynasty ranks overall on fantasypros.com already. So hope people are checking those out. But Tez Walker is a player I'll be avoiding in dynasty rookie drafts. If anything, this just makes it more clear cut that this passing offense is going to run, especially underneath with Andrews and Flowers leading the way. And to be honest, OBJ out the door, Tez Walker's all they brought in. This, if you have any hope at all for Rashad Bateman, this gives you a little bit of sliver of hope. I can't say that I'm there anymore, but I got to mention it.
Well, I'm glad you're finally catching up to me. I was gone already last year. I pulled that car away. That Uber's left the station. Buffalo Bills, obviously, they had a need at wide receiver. Ironically, or oddly enough, they kind of moved out of that first round into the second to address it with Keon Coleman. Thor, did they, in your opinion, come away with what they needed? Because the rest of this draft year, from the Bills' perspective, again, they needed safety help. They needed to replace Poyer. Did they do enough replacing the pieces that have been jettisoned by them in the offseason?
I think they did a good job of hitting their needs. And the other thing I'll give them is they did show discretion, like you mentioned, in trading down a couple times. And then they did take Coleman at the top of the second there. And they took advantage of Disco Dan Morgan and his bizarre decision to give them free draft equity to swap slots there. And we'll talk about that more when we hit the Carolina Panthers and our NFC one, because I have more thoughts on that. But the Bills profited from free draft equity tossed their way in that one. But just, you know, as far as the Bills go in the decisions they made in the slots that they picked in, Coleman, you know, again, the discretion where you get the draft equity and then move down. I thought that was good. And he certainly does fill a need. And he's a good fit for Allen in terms of the Keon Coleman's game, getting downfield. He's the good contested catch guy, former basketball player for Tom Izzo. Keon Coleman's best thing is getting up in the air and jumping higher than you. And then he's got the ball skills. He's not going to separate from anyone, though, and in the intermediate area, not going to give you much utility there. I had him 46th on my board. It's possible you could have moved down just a little bit lower to get him. And there was a couple other receivers on the board I liked just a little bit more than him. I did like the Cole Bishop pick. It was their selections later on where, by and large, I disagreed with most of them. I did like a couple of them. Javon Sullivan, for instance, later on, the Troy edge rusher who was prolific with his sack numbers. Long arms, but undersized outside of that. Very relentless. He's a kid that I like. But some of the other picks, I just was not there with Brandon Bean this year, like I generally am. So that's why I ended up giving the Bills a C-minus this year.
C-minus from Thor. D-Bro, again, there were some wide receivers on the board that we all discussed that night. And if you missed it, you can go back and watch our live stream and our live reactions to the draft. It's up there on the YouTube channel. But D-Bro, we were sort of, I think, underwhelmed a little bit. Is that how the grade ended up as well for you?
Yeah, I bounced between giving them a C. I did give them a C minus, but I bounced between a C minus and a D plus. I thought their draft was wretched. If you look at, now they did fill needs with wide receiver and safety. Now, but for me, I'm not a high on Keon Coleman, which, I mean, it won't surprise anybody if you've been listening to the NFL draft show on Fantasy Pros. But Keon Coleman, yes, they filled a need, but I look at this as Buffalo is sending signal that this is going to be not a force all the targets to Keon Coleman. So I think he's going to be criminally overdrafted in dynasty rookie drafts. I've got him as a late second, early third pick in my updated rankings. And really, there's nothing. I mean, tell me if this gets you excited, Joe. Over the last 2 years, Keon Coleman, yards per route run, he is ranked 175th and 107th. PFF receiving grade, 148th and 79th. There's not a lot to get really excited outside of people to talk about the testing or highlight reel stuff. So Keon Coleman, I'm not in on it, man. I thought they could have gone another direction, selected a different and a better wide receiver where they went. And if you keep moving down the board, I think this just makes Dalton Kincaid that much more of a smash this year. I think he's going to lead the Buffalo Bills in targets. And if you look after week six last season, amongst 62 qualifying tight ends, 8th in target share, 10th in targets per route run, 12th in yards per route run. He's going to absolutely crush this season. And the fourth round selection of Ray Davis, while I do not hate Ray Davis as a player, And I've already seen a lot of takes out on social media about, oh, Ray Davis had receiving touchdowns in college, and Ray Davis is coming for the pass game work of James Cook and stuff. Do you realize that James Cook, like, one of his best skill sets coming out of college and what we've seen in the NFL is as a receiver? So people are getting out over their skis with all this rookie FOMO, and they're, you know, 2 weeks ago was like, I hate this rookie running back class, and now they're like, oh, fourth round Ray Davis, he's coming for the job of James Cook. I'm not there. Haven't been there, not going to be there. James Cook, after last year, after week 10, was 10th in targets per route run, 4th in receiving yards per game, and 2nd in yards per route run amongst all running backs. So I'm not that worried about Ray Davis, especially as much as the consensus, but definitely not in love with the Buffalo Bills draft.
All right, championships are built on the lines, typically speaking, and the Cincinnati Bengals started their draft that way. They took an offensive tackle, then a defensive tackle, Chris Jenkins there. Then they did address, again, the elephant in the room, which is what's going on with T. Higgins, so we're going to draft another wide receiver. So, Thor, we start to look back at the dust settling from the Cincinnati Bengals. How did they make out in terms of what they did with their draft equity?
This is a draft class that I gave a C to, where I am guaranteeing that I'm going to be wrong. In a decade, this draft class is either going to be an A or it is going to be an F. And the reason for that is what the Bengals did was swing from the heels in their slots, and they shot for the moon. And so they went boom or bust in for, you know, and that's what they did. So what I did in my grading and my methodology, I have to split the middle on this thing in terms of grading it. That's why they got a C, but that ain't how this thing is going to end. You know, we're just splitting the middle in the way we're judging it in this moment. But, you know, they started out with this thing, set the tone early with Amarius Mims. Amarius Mims has all the talent in the world. Kid who's 6'8", 340 pounds, 96th percentile athlete. And we have seen all the flashes at Georgia, but he started only 8 games. He has already had 2 lower body injuries in his very short time there. Will he hold up at the NFL level with those lower body injuries in that enormous frame? That's, you know, we're going to have to see on that. I do trust the physical ability with him. He has played well against top competition in that brief time. But my bigger concern is the lower body, just because we haven't seen the sample size. We've already seen those couple injuries. The Chris Jenkins pick in the second round, that was the one higher floor pick they did. His father, obviously, is the NFL stud, and Chris Jenkins was a multi-year starter on the championship teams at Michigan, well-coached, was a Feldman freak lister, et cetera. But then, they hit it down the fairway one time with the safer pick, and then it went right back to shooting the moon. Jermaine Burton was the all-time shoot the moon pick at receiver. D-Bro and I, and especially D-Bro, just absolutely adore the film on Jermaine Burton, but big-time character concerns with Jermaine Burton. I had heard that multiple teams had taken him off their draft board, talked about the character concerns, all process. It just is what it is. I, you know, talked about how he had taken a swipe when there was a crowd storming during the Tennessee game, when he was in college, different stuff like that. So I was kind of surprised he ended up going in the third round based on some of that stuff. Obviously Cincinnati likes the tape, and of course you like the tape, but he has to stay focused on the field for that to play up. The one that I loved of their shoot the moon ethos was the early fourth round pick of Eric Gall, who has Eric, speaking of all the ability in the world, in this poor tight end class after Brock Bowers, there were so few quality receivers. Eric Gall easily has the second best. He's the second best receiving tight end in this class, bar none. Mm-hmm. But will his body hold up in the NFL? He a couple years ago, the back injury where he left Michigan then. And then last year, he does come back when he transfers to Iowa, immediately plays. Beginning of the season, he was playing awesome. Then he tears his ACL. Ends up declaring for the draft. Some people thought he was ranked lower on boards throughout the industry. D-Bro and I were very, very bullish. Turns out the Bengals were too. I love that shoot the moon call. He is exactly what the doctor ordered for Joe Burrow and the guy that we have been calling out for the Bengals to draft. If Eric Gall ends up staying healthy in the NFL, he will be an abject steal. But but overall for this Bengals class, end up giving him a C for those reasons.
So as a little Ricky Bobby, you're the first or last here with this one. So yep. D-Bro, I know there's some names there that you really like, though, the later ones. So would you end up giving the Bengals here in a grade?
Because they picked 2 of the guys off of my guys list for this class. Mm-hmm. I gave him a B+, and I was almost near an A. And
okay.
I'm with the swing from the heels. I'm absolutely in line with everything Thor said. And to add on top of here with Jermaine Burton, he entered the process, and I get the off-field stuff, but the tape and the analytics back it up. He entered the process as my wide receiver 10. After the post-draft, he's my wide receiver 9. Maybe they still move on from T. Higgins. Even if they don't, I think he starts in 3 wide receiver sets from day 1. And he's a stud, man. 90th percentile versus single coverage last year. And again, hammering on what Thor already mentioned about Eric All, we have waxed poetic about him on the NFL draft show. And I'll add this to it. I love, and we'll talk about the Ben Sennett later. If Eric All would have stayed healthy the entire year, he would have been the clear tight end 2 of this draft class. He was entering the draft, my tight end 3. He exits my tight end 3. I will draft Eric All and trade into Dynasty rookie drafts to get him every single place that I can, because he needs to be on all the rosters in Dynasty. As a player over the last 2 years, when he's garnered at least 20 targets in college, 10th in yards per route run, 30 yards per route run. Before he left last season due to injury, he was 7th amongst all FBS tight ends in receiving yards, 11th in missed tackles forced. He finished the year, Joey, still leading the nation amongst all tight ends in FBS with at least 10 man coverage targets in yards per route run. We talked about that metric last year with Sammy Ballgame and why people needed to be high on him. They need to do the same thing with Eric All. You can bypass. Don't reach for Brock Bowers in Dynasty rookie drafts. Just allow the beautiful value of Eric All to grace your Dynasty rosters.
Preach, all right. Dude.
D-Bro is all in there on all. Cleveland Browns did not have a first-round pick, which makes it tough sometimes to get a really good grade, I'm sure, from Thor. But when you step back, Thor, and you look at what the Cleveland Browns did do with the picks that they had, what did you make of their grade?
I like that you set it up that way, because I want to make the point that a lack of draft equity, or the bad trades that led you to have a lack of draft equity, I don't bake that into my grading methodology. I'm only judging the ball where it lies when you make those picks. And the Cleveland,
a lot of good golf metaphors on the show today.
I'll get a happy, so far. I'm going to get a Happy Gilmore one in at some point today, Joey.
I hope so.
The Browns earned the D+ that I gave them because of those picks. The one that I liked was the first one right out the gate, Michael Hall from Ohio State. There was a lot of symmetry with that one. First of all, it hit the Browns' biggest need with a local kid in Hall. At you know, again, their position of biggest need, and at that position, it was about to fall off the shelf. Hall was the last interior defensive lineman before there was a big teardrop there. A 3 technique in Michael Hall that crashes into the backfield, one of those gap shooting guys. But again, like, there was a big talent drop after that. But speaking of dropping off after that, the Browns class, I didn't like the rest of what they did. We all assumed that Zach Zinter, there was going to be last year, Andrew Voorhees from USC dropped into the 7th round because he was injured. He was a great college guard, and then he was injured coming into the process. We all assumed that something similar was going to happen with Zach Zinter. Instead, it seemed like the Browns overdrafted Zach Zinter from where he would have been if he was healthy. Jamari Thrash, I thought they overdrafted him. The only other pick that I liked of theirs, I do like Bookie Watson, the Mississippi State linebacker that the Browns took. I just love his game. He's not the most physically gifted guy, but he's just one of those. He's like a William Wallace, like go down on the sword kind of a guy. He's just fun to watch. But there are other picks at the end there. I didn't love those ones either. So I just thought a series of reaches on the rest of the picks. So I had to give them a D+.
D-Bro, what was your grade of the Cleveland Browns?
F. Absolute F. You could talk about Michael Hall filling a knee, but the rest of these picks just felt like you just – I don't know what the hell they're doing. I'll just leave it at that. Like, I like Jamari Thrash, and we talked about him on previously on the NFL draft show. But I'm firmly convinced, outside of the Amari Cooper trade, this team has no clue about how to evaluate wide receivers. You trade for Jerry Jeudy, good luck with that. You traded for Elijah Moore. I mean, again, good luck with that.
They drafted Cedric Tillman. The Elijah Moore one was interesting. Like, I think all of us thought, okay, let's get him with an actual quarterback. But the problem was, again, that's still the big question. We still haven't seen an actual quarterback. But this is the problem, right? When you make that big move for Deshaun Watson, you go all in. If it doesn't work, it's really hard to recoup.
It's a rudderless ship, Joey. Rudderless ship. They're dead in the water.
Well, I'll try to rudder us back to shore and see what we do here. Let's go. I don't know if it's going to get any better here. Talk about back-to-back in alphabetical order. This is how we're doing it. We're not trying to pile on in the AFC. Whoa. But the Denver Broncos are next. Thor Nystrom. It wasn't all that shocking that Bo Nix, for us, went where he went. We had done some mocks where we just said, well, this is their pick. They're going to go ahead and take their guy. And on draft night, they did. They did exactly that. But they did get Troy Franklin at a discount later on. There were a few other selections they made here at the wide receiver selection spot there, and as well as, the wide receiver position, and as well as an edge rusher too with Ellis. What are your thoughts on the Denver Broncos, how they grade out for you?
Yeah, we've done the whole Bo Nix thing so many different times. I'm not even going to delve into that. People know my thoughts. If you don't, you can read any of the things, watch the live show, watch all the different shows we did on that. I thought it was an utter abomination of a pick. I comp him to Kenny
Pickett. What do you really think?
The thing that I'll say, I thought that they had guaranteed themselves one of the two yearly Fs that I give out in the bell curve methodology that I do with my grading. The compliment that I will give to Sean Payton and crew is that they somehow got up to a D, which means that they also climbed above the two yearly D minuses that I give in the bell curve. How did they salvage this despite picking a guy that I gave a round three grade to at pick 12 in Bo Nix? The Jonah Ellis pick at 76 was strong, the Utah edge rusher. Then the Troy Franklin pick at 102, I thought was inspired. Of course, Bo Nix's collegiate teammate, the wide receiver. I think that they might end up that Troy Franklin might end up giving them more long term value than Bo Nix, their first round pick. We'll have to see on that. But Troy Franklin certainly gave Bo Nix a lot of yardage that he did not deserve in college with the yak stuff. So we'll see about that. But I also love the Chris Abrams drain pick at 145, a very feisty cornerback who's undersized, but from Missouri. That's why he ended up falling down. Not the best athlete either, but like the play style, he's very skilled, feisty, stuff like that. Audric Estime, Erickson's boy, ends up going there as well. A guy that if he hits his ceiling, he looks a lot like Chris Carson. So the rest of the picks outside of Bo Nix, even the last couple picks, I thought were pretty good as well. So down the board, outside of the Bo Nix pick, I thought that they did decent. So they went from what would have been enough to salvaging a D.
D-Bro, your grade for the Denver Broncos.
We're riding together with this. I almost gave them an F. I gave them a D just because the Bo Nix pick was so atrocious. And I will state this for Dynasty rookie drafts. I will be avoiding Bo Nix in every Dynasty rookie draft. I get the reasons to select him, and I understand the first round draft capital. We did that with Mac Jones. Didn't work out. We did that with Kenny Pickett. Didn't work out. Mm. People will talk about it as a process pick, and you get QB2 type of production out of him in Dynasty. Good luck with that. It's not going to move the needle for any of your Dynasty teams. So I will go with skill players. I would go the other route. I with Thor, I thought Franklin was a fantastic value, especially as well as with Audric Estime. The NFL was worried about his size, I guess, with Troy Franklin. I'm not that worried. Now, I did drop him. I had him, and this is total clarity. I had him as my wide receiver 4 pre-draft. He has dropped to my wide receiver 11. He is my 22nd overall player in Superflex. I think he's a really, really good value because this is the depth chart he's competing against, Joey. You got Cortland Sutton, Josh Reynolds, Marvin Mims, Adam Trautman, and Dulcich. Like, this is it's lackluster. So can Troy Franklin ascend to this depth chart and eventually be the wide receiver 1, especially we're talking about the chemistry that he does have with Bo Nix? It's definitely possible. And I'll add on top of the Estime pick too. I thought Thor, laid it out perfectly. Javonte Williams is also an unrestricted free agent next year. So they don't have to, they can let him walk and they have their early down complement. But we also have to mention very quickly, wheels up for Jaleel McLaughlin. With all the screens and the underneath stuff that's coming with Bo Nix now under center, Jaleel McLaughlin, I threw this out on X, and I was, of course, making a joke. I was like, he's going to get 120 screen targets. Now, that he's not going to hit that number, but I believe I've talked about him in numerous shows already that I think he's going to be a fantastic value. He is going to be better than people are giving him credit for, and now with this marriage of a quarterback that loves to check down and throw underneath, I think Jaleel McLaughlin is the real, real big winner, and a lot of people are not going to be talking about him this week.
The Houston Texans had a great draft last year. They got their franchise QB. They got the leader of their defense. But Thor, it seems like a different set of circumstances for 2024 for the Texans for you.
Yeah, we gave them their flowers last year, so let's toss some cold water on them this year. Houston, you get a D-minus this year. It went the other way this year. Didn't have the first round pick, but again, that's that we don't grade you on draft equity, just how you did in your slots. Didn't love it. The first pick was a 42, Kamari Lassiter. I didn't like Kamari Lassiter's game. The lack of foot speed, I saw him get torched over the top several times on tape. You have to move him inside. I thought in terms of the slot guys, there was other slot guys that I liked. If it's the pure slot projection, at 59, they took Blake Fisher. I realized that the offensive tackles were getting yanked up the board. Maybe you should have prioritized that at the 42 pick instead of yanking up Kamari Lassiter. There was just some three-dimensional chess decisions like that where I thought Houston was getting caught behind. And it's like, man, if you guys had all Thursday where you didn't have to do anything, maybe you should have thought some of these things through when you were watching on TV, the environment that you were in. Just seems like they were a step behind. And some of these decisions, I was scratching my head. Great process last year. This one wasn't so good.
D-Bro, are you in the same spot here with Thor, where it's kind of a disappointing considering how good last year was for the Texans?
Yeah, I mean, I gave them a D. I almost went with an F. The few fantasy guys that they did draft, I mean, as far as skill position stuff, like Cade Stover, he's buried in my ranks. He's my tight end 7 for rookies. Dalton Schultz is going to be the starter for the next 2 years. That pick was head-scratching, especially when you just gave the new contract to Dalton Schultz and you already had Brevin Jordan on the team. And Jawar Jordan going in the 6th round, he's going to help the team, but I don't care about him as far as dynasty goes, because he's going to help the team as a kick returner. So I'm avoiding him. He's not even on my board or taxi squad grouping.
All right, let's move on next to the Indianapolis Colts. That's a team that I am very excited about in 2024 with Anthony Richardson hopefully coming back healthy and some of the pieces they have in place there. They started with edge, then they went wide receiver, which again, I'm sure that's going to be one we talk about with Mitchell. That was a guy that was not as high on these guys' boards as some other people's boards. But Thor, what'd you make of the Colts draft here when you step back from it?
I didn't have any real problems with this one, but for me, this is like a kind of a hit it down the fairway kind of a draft. I really liked the first pick in Latu from UCLA. They stopped the record of the run at the beginning with the 14 straight offensive players. So congratulations to anyone that was holding a Latu first defender off the board ticket. You obviously have cashed that ticket by now. And I like that decision by the Colts. Latu was the best pass rusher in this class. Not sure that it was close. The Colts medical team obviously felt comfortable with his medicals. You know, a couple of years before that at Washington, he had medically retired. Everyone out there knows everything about that, so we won't get into that. But the last 2 years at UCLA, when he came back, that guy was a devastating pass rusher. He has all the athleticism you want, 6'5", 260 pounds, in a 94th percentile athleticism package. And then the ridiculous pass rushing moves. You know, I called them a jukebox. He not only has all the pass rushing moves, the deep grab bag of the reservoir of pass rushing moves, but he just cycles through them so fast. So it's like he's such a frustrating pest of a guy to go against for the offensive tackles, because they'll shut one down and then he just cycles through them. And you have to shut one down, shut one down, shut one down. He just keeps going. Just relentless and an infectious energy guy that, you know, we were hearing him down in Mobile. He was, encouraging to all of his teammates. You would hear him from the stands, you know, when someone had a energetic play, a hustle play running to the sidelines. It was always Latu, encouraging him and yelling and stuff like that. So I just love that pick. Adonai Mitchell falls the middle of the 2nd round. The Colts ended up taking him. D-Bro and I were not fans of Adonai Mitchell, but getting him where the Colts got him, zero problem with that. And he fills the exact role that D-Bro and I were advocating that the Colts plug, which is wide receiver 2, pop the top, force the defense to have the second safety over the top, helping out on that side because of the Anthony Richardson thing and then the spacing thing, right? And now you can't have the spy and everything like that. That will help the spacing now that with the box as well. You thin that thing out. I thought it was a decent draft. The day 2 was kind of meh for me in the ROI. Like I said, just sort of hitting it down the middle, but a decent draft. I give it a C-.
All right. D-Bro, do you have a little bit tougher of a time getting out of this Colts draft?
Yeah, I felt like there was some definite, not reaches, but some head scratching picks. Like, again, I'm not a fan of A.D. Mitchell's game. I do understand the fit that he has for the Colts, and that's where it's going to come down. Like, he's just going to be running clear outs. So I was told he was a lock to go in the round one. I was told that he was an X receiver. I was told all these fantastic things the entire process by people about that loved A.D. Mitchell. Haven't been there, not there. I think that he went about, I don't disagree with the value. I just disagree that I feel like considering the role that he will play, there were better wide receivers still on the board. So A.D. Mitchell, look, late second, early third round pick as far as dynasty rookie drafts. If you want a guy that's going to give you streaky MBS type of production, then A.D. Mitchell's your guy. But yeah, I give the Colts a little bit tougher grade. I give him a D.
Now, the Jacksonville Jaguars traded back. They end up getting Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. They went defensive tackle, then corner in the first few picks. Thor, what'd you think of the Jaguars draft?
The trading down at the beginning, that was what I liked that they did. You know, obviously they had targeted Brian Thomas and they were able to get good value on the trade down. Then you end up taking Thomas at a more acceptable price point. I had Brian Thomas number 26 on my board. They end up taking him 23rd. I'm not going to quibble too hard about that. I comp Brian Thomas to Christian Watson. I think that he'll do just fine in Jacksonville. The rest of the class I thought was okay. They slightly reached, in my opinion, on Mason Smith. Mason Smith is a total boomer bust proposition. He has all the tools you want. 6'5", 306, 85th percentile athlete. He has that physical tool set. He sort of reminds me of Javon Kinlaw when Javon Kinlaw was coming out of South Carolina. But it's just the total tool set that you know, he was like this top 25 recruit coming out of high school that did not ever flower out at LSU. So will Jacksonville be able to figure that out? We'll see. But they, you know, speaking of shooting the moon, that was what was happening with that pick. The rest of this class, I didn't know really what they were doing beyond that. I disagreed with a lot of the rest of their picks. That's why I ended up giving Jacksonville a D plus for their efforts.
All right, D-Bro, what'd you make of the Jags?
I gave him a C minus. I mean, I've wavered back and forth, C minus or a D. The guy that I really want to highlight here is Brian Thomas Jr. I mean, considering where they got him, I don't disagree. Again, a player that I think, much like A.D. Mitchell, his game is a little more limited. He's going to stretch the field. I just felt like it was duplicity with them already signing Gabe Davis. And people could hate that, but if no, Brian Thomas Jr.
Same thing I thought, too.
Yeah, I mean, like, with Brian Thomas Jr., I think a lot's getting lost in the sauce as far as all the LSU and the Jaden Daniels stuff. If we want to talk about, okay, did Brian Thomas Jr. and those receivers make Jaden Daniels, or was it the other way around? I think emphatically in the case of Brian Thomas Jr., it was definitely the way around with Jaden Daniels making his grade. Now, he tested great, but none of these numbers jump off the page. 92nd and 290th in PFF receiving grade of the last 2 years. The guy that I think that the fallout of this is, I'm going to draft a ton of Christian Kirk this year. You're going to have Brian Thomas Jr. and Gabe Davis stretching the field. Tons of room underneath is going to be available for Christian Kirk and Evan Engram. Christian Kirk last year, weeks 2 through 12, was the wide receiver 19 in fantasy points per game. He will not be valued like that with everybody, you know, gravitating probably to the shiny new toy and Brian Thomas Jr. I'm all in on Kirk.
The back-to-back Super Bowl champions are up next to the Kansas City Chiefs. Before we get to them, by now, most of you have probably heard of Reality Sports Online, the powerful fantasy sports platform where owners get to build and manage their fantasy team like an NFL general manager. But the question is, have you tried it? Because it's time for you now to see what all the buzz is about in the Dynasty community. Free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, multi-team trades, franchise tags, contract extensions, first-round rookie options, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and much, much more. Think it sounds complicated? Don't worry, it's not. The best thing about Reality Sports Online front office is that it doesn't take any more time than a standard league to run. It just requires a little bit more strategy. So if you're thinking you're among the fantasy elite, it's time right now to use this platform to test your mettle. And if you're still not sure, you can test out our general manager skills for free over at Reality Sports right now with a free mock free agency auction going on. And if you like what you see, use that promo code FANTASYPROS to receive 10% discount on your team or league today. Again, that promo code FANTASYPROS to get a 10% discount on your team or league today. Fantasy just got real at realitysportsonline.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret, like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all, but here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like check out these hair plugs. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, like John Cena got it. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
The Kansas City Chiefs, they've been pretty real. I got to say, man, it felt to me, Thor, like the rich just got richer. What did you think?
I give them an A-minus. You know, and the Chiefs, they're typically around there, and obviously that is why they're so successful in addition to their quarterback. They just draft so, so well. You know, we were talking about this from the outset with the Ravens. There was some very interesting three-dimensional chess decisions being made at the end of the first round. In the wake of that environment that we were in with all the offensive tackles going early, because you had some of these blue blood franchises there at the end of the first round that really needed offensive tackle help. But these franchises are so successful because they refuse to overpay to trade up, or they refuse to reach for guys that aren't worthy of going it. No pun intended with the Chiefs eventual selection,
well done.
But they refused to do that for, you know, to reach up for guys. So you had the interesting decisions with those teams. With the Chiefs' decision in their slot, it came down to, do we take the ultimate guy? They took Xavier Worthy, or do we go an offensive tackle? It would have been Guyton for them. So that was what it was for them in the first round. They end up going with Worthy in that split decision and kick the can to the offensive tackle in the second round, which was a big risk with where the offensive tackle sat at that moment, because they really could have dried up. You could not guarantee yourself in that moment that there would be a quality prospect available at the end of the second round. But they end up taking Xavier Worthy, which is really, really cool. The guy that breaks the NFL Combine record for speed, you are clearly evoking Tyreek Hill with that. And you are clearly calling that back for Patrick Mahomes. A Kansas City Chiefs team that needed a dynamic receiver weapon. It was the one thing that offense was desperately calling out for last season. The fact that they won the Super Bowl anyway was kind of ridiculous, but now they get that one thing that they obviously needed. I comp Xavier Worthy to DeSean Jackson. A couple other guys, you know,
That comp, by the way. To me, he's more DeSean Jackson than Tyreek Hill, so everyone needs to slow their Tyreek Hill roll.
Love that.
Yeah, but just in terms of the explosion and the, you know, if you can get him out into space, hit him on the hands, that's where everyone in the stadium is going to hold their breath, and you know, in the same way up at DeSean Jackson. The one thing that they're going to have to work on him with is the dropsies. There's some ball skill issues with him. he had 12.
Well, he fits right in Kansas City then, Thor, because
exactly
they were pretty good at dropping the football last year.
You had 12 charted drops with Worthy the past couple of years. I actually think that there was a little bit more than that. Now, he was pounded with targets on those past couple of Texas teams as by far their wide receiver one. So maybe as a guy who's not going to be initially the wide receiver one, we'll have to see on that. And then you work on the ball skills a little bit more, but everything else plays with him. He's a very good route runner, obviously the athleticism. So anyway, I was fine with that pick. I like that pick, but then the Chiefs sort of lucked out when Kingsley Suamataea falls to the end of the second round. I had talked about this with the Ravens pick before. I would have taken Suamataea above Roger Rosengarten, who the Ravens take one pick above. Suamataea, I had 39th on my board. The Chiefs end up getting him 63rd. So that was a stroke of luck. On day three, I love the Chiefs pick of Jaden Hicks from Washington State at 133. I actually had him 65th on my board. He was my second safety. Really like what the Chiefs did again this process. I generally do. It's why they're so good at this. Give him an A-.
D-Bro, are you just as excited as Thor and myself about the Chiefs 2024 draft?
I am. I'm going to poo-poo one or two of their picks, though. I gave them a B+, so still, I kind of wavered back and forth A-, B+. I'm with everything that Thor mentioned about Xavier Worthy. He started the process as my wide receiver 5. He is now my wide receiver 4. I'm all in on him. If you want to talk about Sky Moore, and that's the reason why you're worried about drafting Xavier Worthy, you need to get your eyes checked, because you know you have not watched the film. They are two totally different players. But moving down the board, man, the big winner, I think, out of all of this is going to be Isaiah Pacheco. They did not draft a running back, did not address the position. Jerick McKinnon gone. We got a 4-game sample last year of Isaiah Pacheco being the workhorse, playing over 70% of the snaps in 3 of those games, where he averaged 20.2 touches, almost 101 total yards per game. He's going to be the guy, the do-it-all guy in that backfield. I'm probably going to have him ranked as an RB1. But the reason that I also bumped him down the board just a little bit, are we going to do all this crap again with that people did with Noah Gray, with Jared Wiley? I've already seen some of it on social media. I'm sorry, I'm not there. I haven't been there. I had him ranked lower. I know Thor was not in on Wiley as well. Going in the 4th round, there were other guys like Eric All, you could have drafted, moved around the board to get. Going with Jared Wiley, I just feel like we're going to do this all over again, and people are going to talk about, just like they did with Noah Gray, and puff him up. I'm sorry, Jared Wiley is not that guy. And if you want to look at the analytics, 31st and 8th in PFF receiving grade, so, okay, you like the grade, 5 missed tackles forced in his entire collegiate career. He is a catch and fall tight end. I will be avoiding him in Dynasty rookie drafts.
All right, let's move on to Vegas and see how they fared here. They took the best player available to them with Brock Bowers. A lot of people thought maybe they would do something else or trade out. They did not. They stayed there. Jackson Powers Johnson, the center. So Glaze, I know a player that there's a lot of love for in this room. So Thor, the Raiders, would you grade him?
Brock Bowers, the opposite of a catch and fall tight end. I love that pick. And I know that there's concern that the offensive coordinator they have and the brass there, that they're going to have a hard time figuring out how to work Bowers in. I think that Brock Bowers is idiot proof. I think that no matter what coaching staff, it's not that they'll figure out how to use him. He's going to get onto the field, and then the quarterback's going to get him the ball, and then Brock Bowers advances it. It just is what it is. When he went to Georgia as a true freshman, they had this nasty receiving corps full of NFL guys that are in the NFL now. James Cook was the running back. They had another NFL tight end on that roster. He led that. He became the wide receiver one on that team that won the national championship. They also was a first team All-American. He was the same the next year on both accounts. So, and on a national championship team again. He's not going to be the wide receiver one on this Raider team, but I think that Mr. Adams is going to greatly appreciate his presence on this team, because that will help out Mr. Adams' spacing. And the quarterback, Minshew, a guy who throws it short and intermediate, is going to love the yards that are manufactured by Bowers. Bowers, you can line him up anywhere and then just shuttle him the ball. And then, again, he manufactures it, breaks tackles, and all that sort of stuff. The Raiders are going to love him. And the value was good there, too. You know, he got pushed down a little bit because of some of these ridiculous quarterback decisions, above there. But he was number 9 on my board. They got him 13. That was great. Also, speaking of great value, Jackson Powers Johnson going 44 in particular in this environment where all these offensive linemen have gone above him, mostly at the tackles. Jax Powers Johnson, center dash guard, but him getting pushed down there, fabulous, fabulous value for the Raiders. He was number 31 on my board, so I love that. You mentioned that Delmar Glaze, he was one my pet offensive tackle sleeper. I think other guys were people in the industry were sleeping on him because they just automatically assumed that he would just be a guard. I think you get three position versatility with him, with the guard and the right tackle. The Raiders obviously really, really liked him. I'm a fan of his game as well. And then down the board, like you look at each one of the guys they got, I was bullish on almost every single one of the dudes that they ended up popping. Dylan Lobby, very, very late, is a tremendous receiving back coming up from the FCS. I was banging the table for Trey Taylor, a late safety they got from Air Force, won the defensive back of the year award last year in the FBS. And tested very well as well. They got an interesting safety from Pittsburgh late. I was a big fan of this Raiders draft. I ended up giving it a B+.
Debro, are you as big of a fan as Thor with the Raiders in?
I gave them an A. I had to give them an A. I think that there are a lot of teams we're going to talk about that smashed the draft. I thought the Raiders just crushed it at every part. Taking Brock Bowers as well as addressing, because they have big needs on the offensive line. And I think all of that's really going to help, especially the quarterbacks that they have. They need time in the pocket. And I think all they did was make their life easier. And the guy that I want to highlight in all of this is Zamir White. Everybody talked about him. Then people were sleeping like, oh, well, Zamir is going to, you know, I don't hate the Dylan Lobby pick. He's going to help them out on passing downs. But Zamir is going to be one of the engines of this offense. And we saw that last year for Antonio Pierce. Weeks 15 through 18, he averaged 23.3 touches per game, 114 total yards. He was the RB12, Joey, in fantasy points per game. I'm going to have him not ranked aggressively, but he will be a top 15 running back. If people hate that, I'm sorry. Go to the numbers. Look at the volume he's going to get, as well as when he was the starter, 13th in explosive run rate. He's going to get all the work, man. He might cede a little bit of the routes to Dylan Lobby this year, but the goal line touches, the early down work, he's going to get volume, and we know volume is king in fantasy.
Another team that I thought had a great draft, Los Angeles Chargers. They start off with the tackle, as we said they were going to with Joe Alt. They landed McConkey at wide receiver, Junior Colson, the linebacker. You bring in your guy if you're Harbaugh. I mean, Thor, this felt like an A to me, but what did you give him?
Absolutely crushed it. I gave him an A-. Mentioned Joe Alt. There was thought that they could take J.C. Latham, but they ended up doing the right thing with Joe Alt, the best tackle in this class, and stayed with what we thought that they were going to do. Harbaugh wanting to build up the offensive line from the very first pick of him taking over this franchise. Then with the second one, Ladd McConkey, what a smash pick there at the top of the second round. We knew heading in that their receiving core stunk. And for, you know, it was like, yeah, I know their receiving core stinks, but the Vegas board, they had the receiver as the favorite within that fifth slot. And it's like, I know Jim Harbaugh. I'm pretty sure he's not going to take a receiver with the first pick. It made all kinds of sense at the top of the second. And Ladd McConkey in particular, a guy who gets open at utter will. Justin Herbert is going to love working with that guy. And in the offense that Harbaugh runs, as you guys know, it's run on the early downs. You get closer to the sticks. What do you do on third down? You make it manageable. You just need the guy that can get across there every single time. The efficiency thing, that's Ladd McConkey. That guy's going to have a metric ton of catches, and he's a metric ton of times he is going to convert the first down. So love that pick. Next pick, Junior Colson. I couldn't believe the NFL filtered a guy down the board that I thought was the best linebacker in this class, who was the fulcrum point of the nasty Michigan defense last year for Jim Harbaugh that won the national title, down to the 69th pick to Jim Harbaugh. I thought that was crazy. I bet he couldn't believe it in the war room, Harbaugh, as they submitted that card. And then going down into day three, the fabulous values. Cam Hart at 140th. That guy was one of the better cornerbacks last year in the nation. Then he goes to the Senior Bowl. He was awesome. He had awesome athletic testing at the NFL Combine. That was awesome value. My favorite day three sleeper, the people that I looked at my Twitter on Saturday know where I'm going to this, was Kamani Badal of Troy. They got him at 181. The guy I was pounding the table for, all process. I thought it was so interesting that the Rams took Blake Corum. I think it was in round three. Kamani, you know, of course, Jim Harbaugh's boy from college. Kamani Badal is almost in the same physical package, but he's actually a better athlete than Blake Corum is. Kamani Vidal is also an awesome pass blocker. Of course, the Chargers running back room in advance of this, it was J.K. Dobbins and it was Gus Edwards. Kamani Vidal was running back 7 on my board. I ranked him 117th. I am so bullish on that kid. I comped him to Jaylen Warren. I believe that Kamani Vidal upsets both J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards to start as a rookie in that run-first offense that Jim Harbaugh runs. I think he's the sleeper. Dynasty owners out there, listen to my words right now. You go out and get that kid. He's going to surprise people in the NFL.
All right. D-Bro, were you surprised how much you like the Chargers draft?
I love their draft. I also gave them an A. I'm just going to agree with everything Thor said about Ladd McConkey. He entered the pre-draft process my wide receiver 7 or 8. He walks out of it as my wide receiver 6, but the case in Dynasty Rookie Drafts for Ladd McConkey begins at wide receiver 4. He is locked into the first round of Dynasty Rookie Drafts, regardless of format. Moving down the board, Kamani Vidal, that's Thor's boy, he was my RB5 pre-draft, is my RB5 post-draft. I don't care that he went in round 6. Like Thor said, he's competing with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards for work in this backfield, and he's a proven volume back to add to Thor's take here, man. Look, 231 carries at least in each of the last 2 years, 57% of his games in his final collegiate season, he had at least 23 carries. He has proven he can handle the volume. He is a bowling ball, tackle-breaking machine, 21st in PFF elusive rating. I'll be trying to draft and trade into rookie drafts to draft Kamani Vidal this year.
Miami Dolphins up next. Maybe not a big splash draft for the Dolphins, but in your opinion, Thor, did they get what they needed?
Yeah, I think so. I gave them a B. I was speaking of the splash thing. I was advocating in advance of Thursday that they just throw caution to the wind and draft Xavier Worthy to add to their ridiculously speedy receiving core. I thought that would be fun. They ended up
They might have wished that they had, because eventually they're gonna have to pay Jalen Waddle. So.
That is true. And it is fair. Like they say in draft day, people pay to get wet is what they tell Sonny Weaver. But the Dolphins end up exercising discretion and instead take Chop Robinson, who is going to help out the pass rush. Chop Robinson had an utterly ludicrous pressure rate in college, and the athletic profile, 6'3", 254, 97 percentile athlete, the first step, everything like that, the speed to power game that he has, that stuff all translates. The one thing with him, he has the short arms and the pressures were not converted into sacks at the rate that you would expect. So those were the two things of his profile that ended up pushing him out of the top 20, but a very, very interesting prospect at an acceptable price point there. Then they ended up getting one of the last quality offensive tackles that was available when they took Patrick Paul at, again, an acceptable price point. Ended up getting him 55. I had him 54th. In the crazy offensive tackle marketplace that we were in on Friday, Thursday and Friday night, that was beyond fair. The last pick, two other ones that I'll shout out. Jalen Wright, that pick, the Tennessee running back, raised a lot of eyebrows when the Dolphins took him because obviously they have Devin Achane and they had given out the extension to the veteran blank. Who's there? Their other running
Mostert.
Yeah, Mostert. It raised a lot of eyebrows when they took Jalen Wright. Just some context for people out there. I was told earlier in April that the Dolphins were the team that was all over Jalen Wright, all process, like more than anyone else, and by a significant margin, which confused me when I heard that. So I asked some more questions about that. And then I thought about it more and asked some more questions about it. It started to make more sense to me as we move closer to the draft. With Achane, you have to cap his touches per game because of his size. Obviously, Mike McDaniel fetishizes backs like this with the home run hitting ability and everything like that. It's not just the injury insurance against a back like that. It's also the ability to keep a back like that on the field at all times. So it's both of those things in conjunction with one another. Achane, you have the thing of with the running on the, whatever. With Jalen Wright, he's a good receiver. He's also a better pass blocker than people think. And so I think initially you get that stuff from him. That's how he can work into a platoon. I think the one thing early on with Jalen Wright that you got to work on, it was the Mickey Mouse offense that he was playing in at Tennessee with the where they have the hyper spread the field out and whatever, and they get the box thinned out. The vision with him on the running concepts in that, he was always just looking for the crease and then to hit the dinger. I think that's certainly a fair nitpick about his game. I think early on in the practices, That's what you're working on him in a more conventional offense, how to read the defensive front and to run with flow behind the offensive line. This is a really good situation for Jalen Rand because you can work on him with that. Achane will take care of that work while you go. You see how you develop him with that. While Jalen Wright, you can take some of the passing down stuff, give Achane a blow on that. The world goes around. I like that pick, and it made more sense to me when I, you know, asked that. So last one, I'll shout out the Malik Washington pick at 184. Absolute steal. He was number 90 on my board. A guy that I comp to Rondale Moore, a tackle breaking machine that can actually run routes. He is the guy that people think that Malachi Corley is.
All right, D-Bro, your take on the Dolphins 2024 draft.
I gave him a B plus, and I really liked a lot of the things that they did. Unfortunately, I don't like a lot of the things that they did for fantasy. This was the nightmare fuel landing spot for Jalen Wright. You have Thor talked about the extension they gave to Raheem Mostert. He's probably going to be splitting work with Devon Achane this week, this year. And Jalen Wright's going to sadly be on the outside looking in, assuming that they stay healthy. But I do love the picks.
That's a big assumption, in all fairness. It's not like they've had a great track record of doing that, those two guys. I mean, Mostert, surprisingly so last year, but not throughout his career.
No, and that's fair. So I think if you're going to take the home run swing in Dynasty rookie drafts, then you draft Jalen Wright. Because the talent is there, the situation is there, it's just how much volume he's going to get and when is he going to get a chance to show what he can do. Because if Mostert stays healthy, that might be 2025. Hell, he's got a two-year contract. That might be 2026. We don't know. So if you're willing to embrace the risk, I totally understand it because he was my RB2 entering this draft process. And I'll double down on what Thor just said about Malik Washington. I thought he should have gone in the third or fourth round. The fact that they got him in round six is not great in the sense of that type of draft capital tied to a rookie. Does he get any opportunities? When are those opportunities come? Because the draft capital is not going to afford him those opportunities. But like you talked about, Joey, if they got to pay Jalen Waddle eventually, does he walk out the door? And then we're getting one of Malik Washington, or speaking of another Washington here, Taj Washington. Do either one of these guys get opportunities in this passing attack? Love the Malik Washington value. I don't like it that much for Dynasty, but it's a smash pick for the Dolphins.
All right, next up here. Be gentle, boys. The New England Patriots, they got their franchise quarterback with Drake May. After that, you know, it's funny. They lulled me into a false sense of security that times were changing. And then it looked like Bill Belichick was actually still somehow working this draft. Thor, what did you grade the Patriots?
I'll try to be as gentle as I can with this. The Drake May ceiling is where I agree with people. It's just early on there needs to be work there. And I hope that the Patriots exercise patience with him. The other thing that I was hoping for was the supporting cast. The supporting cast thing is the thing that people, the Drake May supporters, that's the thing that they would always say as I don't want to say excuse, but when they would be advocating for him, the regression in 2023, they'd be like, well, look at his supporting cast. So they're clearly saying that he needs a supporting cast around him to have success in the NFL, or at least initially. That was one thing that you're hoping for. New England, you're hoping that you can bolster that supporting cast. The rest of this draft, I wasn't sure about after that. Other people are higher on Drake May than me. I had him QB4, did have him as a top 10 guy on my board, but I had him number 8. It was the rest of this draft that was the bigger issue for me. I'm not going to argue against Drake May, you know, as the third guy off the board. But like I said, the rest of the draft, the biggest one for me was the Jalen Polk pick. I believe that Jalen McMillan is better for reasons that we talked about on the live stream and talked about, you know, prior to that on other shows. I think that if Jalen McMillan never gets injured, I don't think that Jalen Polk goes before the fourth round. I think he's a fifth rounder or later. Caden Wallace, I didn't get that one. I didn't get Laydon Robinson. The one pick that I loved of theirs is Javon Baker, who I believe is a better prospect than Jalen Polk. I believe that Javon Baker, in very quick order, could ascend to the wide receiver one role in New England. But yeah, overall, my metrics showed that the Patriots spent the fourth most draft capital in the NFL and came out number 31 in ROI in this class. They absolutely could prove me wrong because there's some upside guys in this class, particularly Drake May. If he becomes a superstar, this draft class is a smash. It doesn't really matter what happens with the other guys. But yeah, coming out, that's where my numbers were at on it.
Well, you seem positive about Baker. I got a text from Scott Bogman over the weekend. Hey, cheer up, buddy. At least they drafted Baker. That's yeah. literally what it says, because, you know, that's Baker what friends can play. Do. Well, let's see. Let's maybe. Hope. He's going to need to. Tough grade here. D-Bro, your thoughts on the Pats draft?
Yeah, I gave him an F. There's no getting around it. After the only picks that they made in their entire draft class that I agree with are Drake May and Javon Baker. And if you would have flipped them and said they took Baker in the second and they took Polk in the fourth, I would have given them probably a better grade. It was egregious. And yes, out on social media, people have already dubbed me the Jalen Polk hater, apparently, because I've gotten a lot of comments with that. But tell me if this really gets you worked up, Joey. Your second-round wide receiver that they drafted last year, 70th in yards per route run, 75th in PFF receiving grade. The year before that, in those metrics, 153rd, 215th. Just, does that really excite
you? It's not even a matter of hating Polk, or if you love Polk, you could have gotten him later, to Thor's point.
Yes.
And Ladd McConkey was sitting right there. And you could have had your cake and eaten it too and taken whoever else you wanted to. That's the frustration, I think, for Patriots fans. So I don't want to spend too long at the dance here on this one, because it's just going to make me more depressed. So let's talk about the Jets. Let's hammer them instead, because nothing Patriots fans love to do more than hammer on the Jets. Again, they took the offensive tackle here to start. There's an odd amount of love here or buzz from the Jet fans on social media about the Corley pick. I'm going to turn things over to you here for the draft grade here, Thor.
Yeah, this should be a pick me up for you, Joe. I give the Jets a D minus for this. Mm-hmm. Fashanu, he certainly has bigger fans than me. I understand some of it, but he was number 21 on my board. They pick him 11. What I don't understand is the Jets picking them. They're outside. I understand, oh, we want one for the future and stuff like that. You have the short term guys on the outside. But it appears that Fashanu probably heads in, or at least right now, is projected as OT3. It's like, guys, aren't you trying to win this year? Like, isn't this a win now scenario with Aaron Rodgers? And you have ostensibly immediate help in the start, or need in the starting lineup, both at slot receiver and at pass catching tight end, you would think. But then you take Fashanu for the future. I didn't really get that one. Like, worry about that after Rodgers retires. You had Brock Bowers on the board. Also, you potentially had an opportunity with Roma Dunze coming down there. I would have contacted that bumbling moron Terry Fontenot and seen if you could save him from himself. And see, like, hey, Terry, you want to just draft Michael Penix in this slot? And at least you can sell it to the fan base. So you picked up some draft equity, you know, while you did it. And then we can steal Roma Dunze from the Bears. That's what I would have tried to do. I don't know if they engaged in that and they just couldn't save Terry from himself. But then, you know, if you're stuck at 11, I would have taken Brock Bowers. But anyway, they take Fashanu there. Then at 65, they take a pick for me that I was getting goosebumps because it so much of so Malachi Corley, I comped him to Amari Rodgers, and the symmetry was crazy. Amari Rodgers, of course, was drafted by the Packers when they had Aaron Rodgers, and of course he busted with the Packers because Aaron Rodgers didn't want to throw the lollipop manufactured touches behind the line of scrimmage, which were the only things that Amari Rodgers could catch to do his broken tackle stuff. That's the only stuff that Malachi Corley does. That was where all of his production came at Western Kentucky. He doesn't run routes. So I mean, we're going to find out if either fate has a sense of humor or if Aaron Rodgers in his old age has decided he wants to throw screen passes behind the line of scrimmage. Otherwise, you don't have a slot receiver right away. I see people putting Malachi Corley into the Jets starting lineup next year. If Aaron Rodgers, again, if he wants to throw a screen pass behind the line of scrimmage to manufacture Malachi Corley's touches, you have your starting slot receiver for next year. Otherwise, you categorically do not. Malachi Corley does not run routes down the field. The rest of it, D-Bro made the joke in the moment of how they left their war room and they just put the auto draft button on for running backs on day three. So I didn't understand that either. This was a weird draft, D-minus for the Jets.
D minus from Thor. D bro, what did you give the Jets?
A D. I don't understand their drafting method at all. It's Malachi Corley is my wide receiver 21 in Dynasty. I will not be drafting him. I will be avoiding, let other people fall on that sword. And you have Breece Hall that you drafted. He's coming another year off of the knee injury, so they're going to lean on him this year. And what? You draft Braylon Allen? What's he going to do? Like, well, you already had Israel Abanikanda from last year. It's like when they get to day three, they're like, let's see what running backs are out there. Let's do this. And they go, Braylon Allen, you have your quarterback of the present. You're all in to win. And you draft Jordan Travis in round five. How is that helping your team this year? How at all? And again in round five. I like Isaiah Davis as a prospect. But tell me, how do you get behind drafting him or Braylon Allen in Dynasty right now as both of them sit behind Breece Hall? If you got Breece Hall on your team in Dynasty, sure. You want to take one of these guys and put them in your taxi squad as the handcuff? That's fine. You're going to hate yourself and you're going to hate life whenever Israel Abanikanda is the guy if Breece Hall misses any time with injury. So the Jets, a D for this draft. Terrible draft.
I thought the Pittsburgh Steelers came out pretty good, Thor. I mean, they took Patanu, Frazier, addressed the offensive line needs. Then they went for wide receiver and Roman Wilson. So what'd you think here of the Steelers draft?
This was a crazy good draft. Yeah, the Steelers had four like clear needs, at least in their starting lineup coming into this thing. And it was like you know, when you line up cans at the shooting range. And then it was like they just took out the piss and it was just bang, 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 like in their first four picks. You mentioned Fatanu. Okay, there goes the tackle need. That thing solved for the next decade. Next one, Frazier, bang. That one solved for the next decade. Next one, how about we take care of that slot receiver? Bang. That one solved for the next decade. Then, starting linebacker, Peyton Wilson, come on down. Bang. And then even the next one, Mason McCormick. There's a shot that he plays early at one of the guard positions because, of course, their whole offensive line was rancid. He's a sleeper coming up from the FCS, a kid that 99th percentile athlete at 6'4", 310. This was a smash of a draft. They were all over this thing and at positions of need as well. It was the value, it was the quality, and all their positions of need. This is about as good as it gets. This one was AAA all the way down the board. Great job by the Steelers.
D-Bro, do you share Thor's sentiments here about the positivity regarding the Steelers draft?
I gave them an A+, and I wish there was a higher grade that I could possibly give them because they absolutely crushed this. Thor nailed it. I mean, their entire offensive line, this is the chess match. This was just the chef's kiss of how you rebuild your entire offensive line, basically, in one draft class. And they crushed it. And you add Roman Wilson. So, I mean, he's going to be starting in week one. He's going to be competing with Van Jefferson, Calvin Austin for snaps. And I hate to tell people, but Russell Wilson hasn't seen the middle of the field over the last, like, 10 years. Justin Fields is not going to see the middle of the field. So Pat Freiermuth is not going to be the number two target in this offense. It's going to be Roman Wilson and a player that, like, the volume stats aren't there. Last year, 29th in yards per route run, 22nd in PFF receiving grade. The Steelers absolutely crushed this draft. I honestly think they had the best draft of any NFL team out there.
All right. So very high marks for the Steelers. Let's close things out here with the Tennessee Titans. Thor, let's start with you. They got their tackle on the offensive side in Latham, then Sweat on the other side. What'd you think of what the Titans did?
Titans were sitting at 7, and they were praying to the gods that the Chargers would trade with a team that was coming up for a quarterback, which would have had the effect of pushing Mr. Joe Alt to number 7, because the Titans desperately needed a not only tackle help, but in particular a left tackle, because Will Levis talked about this in advance of the NFL draft, that he glitches under pressure. So you needed and of course the Titans, they were just so terrible with the pass blocking last year. So you're not really giving Will Levis a fair shake, sending him out there into the Lions den next year behind that offensive line if you don't give him help there. But of course, the Chargers end up sticking and picking. They take Joe Alt. So that put the Titans to a decision there at 7. Do you pull up for Shanu there at 7? Do you do Fatanu there? Those are the only two sort of immediate left tackle guys that you could have taken there. But both of them would have felt like reaches. The Titans ended up taking the guy who was my number two tackle off the board, Latham, at J.C. Latham from Alabama at number 7. And you guys remember on the live stream, I said, I don't disagree with this in terms of qualitatively them taking him. He's a second tackle off my board. But the interesting thing about it is he's a right tackle. This is a guy who has not played a left tackle since high school. I don't think he can play left tackle at the NFL, 6'6", 343. And again, they didn't play him at left tackle at Alabama. Then so that's what we said live. That's what I said live. Then in the post-draft presser, the Titans go to the podium and they say, we're going to play him at left tackle next year. So desperation is a stinky cologne. They don't have another option. That is what they are going to attempt to do. We don't know how he's going to do because we did not see J.C. Latham play left tackle in college. It's really the only concern of my game with J.C. Latham is those feet can get a little bit cumbersome against speed players, and he can get tied up. He's a colossus with power. He is an awesome run blocker. And to get around him on the outside shoulder, it's like running around a cruise ship. But when he can get tied up by those counter moves, because you can get him going the one way, rocking. If with the quick guys, the athletic guys coming the other way, that's where you get that big body moving. That was my concern with him potentially in the NFL in a position he hasn't played again since high school. We'll have to see how it goes, but that is what they're going to try. The rest of the picks, I thought it was a bit of a reach on Sweat, but I love the pick on Cedric Gray to start out day three. Love the pick on Jarvis Brownlee, the next one there. Overall, I give the Titans a C+.
All right, D-Bro, what'd you give the Titans?
I gave them a C-. I agree with all the points on Latham. I thought Sweat was a reach. For fantasy purposes, there's just not much to chew on here. Does the Latham pick supposedly help Will Levis? We'll see. If Latham's not good, it's not going to help him. And Jaquan Jackson is really a zero sum for dynasty managers because he's going to help them on punt return and kick return duties, but not be a factor on the offense.
All right, there you have it. That's what the AFC looks like from the perspective of Thor and Derek. Again, right now, you want to put some of this knowledge into practice. The best way to do it is to use the mock draft simulator tool, which is out right now at fantasypros.com/simulator. Get yourself ready for your dynasty draft this season. It's fast, it's free, and it's the best way to practice any kind of draft. So right now, I would go run over to fantasypros.com/simulator and start mocking today. Great stuff from the boys as always, but of course we love to hear from you. What did you give the NFL draft grades out to certain teams? Drop your grades for the AFC teams below in the YouTube comments. And again, it's always the best thing to do is subscribe to the YouTube channel and don't forget to ring that bell till it goes ding. And speaking of our friends here at the channel, shout out to the following people, Hugh Boner, I believe. I'm going to say that again, it's got an X in it, but I believe the X, if my French is good, is pronounced that way. Derek Brown would tell me because he's the guy that made me read these names of the people who left reviews of your show. It seems like your kind of crew. I could just tell you from the other side. Eastu, Boss Queasy, Angry 365, BP 1015, Benjo, Fizzle, That Goofy Fella, Geizies, Alec, and Riamans. Congratulations. Thank you very much, guys, for listening to these two goons all day during draft season and leaving reviews of the show. They promised they'd shout you out, and they did. But I think it was more just to make me say that first name. But hopefully you stuck around the show to the end for that nugget. And, of course, stick around for the NFC grades as well. That'll do it for us. But the story of the game goes on. For Thor and Derek, I'm Joey P. We'll see you next time, kids.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast. If you love the show, the best free way to support us is by leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Follow us on X, Instagram, and TikTok @FantasyPros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/FantasyPros.